Hello everybody, James here, and it is Ask Dutch Anything, the show where you ask Dutch Mantel, the eponymous man of the podcast, anything you want. And if the question is good enough, you email to questionsfordutch@gmail.com, and if it's good enough, it makes it into the script, and maybe Dutch Mantel might even answer it as well. And Dutch is flashing his figure. It's not available, that figure.
Not
Let's
yet.
Just say that. But it's a tester one. And he's also got the University of Dutch caps holding right there, only about 10 or so, less than 10 so far. So if you want one signed, then you email dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. Same with the books, same with the diplomas, same with all the signed merchandise. And most importantly of all, I forgot to mention this for some reason, we are now on Pro Wrestling Tees. The links are in every video. It took a while. But Yeah, it did take a while. We've got some new designs for T-shirts up as well. Dutch will be wearing them next week, hopefully, by the time they arrive. And I've got the right size for him and everything. And we had to do an extra charge. And that's pretty much it, really, all the plugs. And we're just going to get straight into it because we've got a Fast and Furious 50 minutes coming up for you. RD says, hi, Dutch. Based upon my curiosity, I have two questions, if possible, for you to answer. Number one, was there a process you used to getting into character before heading to the ring? And number two, how did you wind down from portraying your character after you'd reached backstage? All the best.
Well, the character for me was a lot me. So that's like saying, how do you wind down from being yourself?
You took off the mustache.
Yeah. But no, there's no getting into character, because you go out there and, I mean, you can feel it. I could feel it. It's like a comedian once told me, you got to feel the heat in the room. You got to feel the vibe of the room. Now, they talk about a room. We talk about an arena. So when you come out there, you can, and when they announce your name, and you can feel the heat in the room. Okay? And you're walking down, you know, that walk does you good because you're soaking it up. And when you get in the ring, and then you feel it, and you, when you start talking, you can tell from the first words you say, you can, if they're, and they always came really, really hard at me. But it was half a booze. But in some arenas, you know, the boos were interspersed with a lot of cheers. And I've told this story before. They told me, oh, people are really going to hate you. And I went out there the first night, and I was in Nashville. Well, they didn't hate me. Well, first of all, I went out in Nashville where I'd been there. I'd wrestled there for years and years and years as a babyface. So half of it was cheers. But then they heard the message. And the message is now like, hey, we don't need to be, we need to have a border, and we need to have this, and we need to have that, and we need to be Americans. And so the people agreed with that. So when I went out in England one time, now you wouldn't think England would respond to this. It was Manchester, and that's where James is, he lives. So James, I was thinking the other day, you put the man in Chester.
Thank you. I put the chest into Manchester as well, I like to think.
But I went out there, and half of them cheered me. And I said some things that, you know, that should have made them mad, but it didn't. They still cheered me. I said, let me tell you guys, without the United States, you'd all be speaking German. Boy, they really booed. But some of them, they liked it. They thought it was funny. So, and it could be true. It could be true, James, you know.
That's not true.
It could be.
If Germany occupied France for years, and none of the French started speaking German.
Well, I'm...
The Romans occupied Britain for many centuries. Maybe that might be a bad example. The Normans occupied... that might be a bad example.
And nobody spoke Normandy. Right?
Something like that, yeah.
But when I said that, they understood the meaning behind it. But still, they cheered me because it was a universal message, really. Because I was a real American. Jack Swagger was a real American. We were real Americans. And so you don't really have to work yourself into any kind of personality. You just go out there and you just do what you do. And when you go back, there's no getting out of character to be done. You're just done with the night and get dressed, take a shower or whatever you're going to do, and get in the car and go. So most guys don't have to do it because they've done it so much. They can just go out, walk like when you first see the guy, when he comes out through the curtain. Say he could be Paul Heyman standing here and he walks through the curtain and all of a sudden he's, my name is Paul Heyman. So, and he's in character.
I'd puke with nerves. I couldn't cope with that.
You know what helped me a lot, because I'm nearsighted as hell? I actually can't see the crowd. If I could see them, it might be different. I can see maybe the front row, and that's about it. I'm very, very nearsighted. Damn near blind. But I'm not. But when I go out there, and all I got to do is hear them and feel them, and I got it. So...
Let's move on. Chris from Philadelphia says, nobody's ever been able to confirm this story, but in 1961, Bobo Brazil actually defeated Nature Boy Buddy Rogers in August of 61 at the Roosevelt Stadium in New Jersey for the World Heavyweight Championship. I believe this is the NWA World Championship. And it was recognized by the NWA at the time. Buddy and Bobo were close friends. The problem was the promoters went bonkers, believing that the white audience would never accept a black man as champion. So Bobo lost 2 weeks later to Rogers, and Vince McMahon Sr. convinced the editors of Ring and Wrestling Magazine not to mention the title change in their next publishing. Have you heard of this before? Thank you.
I've heard of it. But there's more to that story than what you've just heard. First of all, a title change has to be approved by a board. It's always been this way. So they say, okay, we're going to put the title on Bobo Brazil. Wait a minute. Bobo Brazil was a big name up north, but he meant zip down south. He meant zip in Florida. He meant zip in Georgia, in Texas, Carolinas, Tennessee. He may have meant something around the Midwest, around Ohio and Michigan. People knew him then, but they didn't know him out of the Northeast or in the middle of the country. Down south, they didn't know him. And first of all, you just don't make a change without telling people you're going to make a change. You need to be consulted so you can adjust your booking. You know, there's other territories depending on the world's heavyweight champion to draw money. And so you couldn't bring, all of a sudden you say the champion's coming in, everybody's going to be thinking that's, they knew who the champion was. They may not have seen him, but it's going to be Buddy Rogers. And all of a sudden you have Bobo Brazil walk out of the dressing room. Hard to book that. So they raised hell, rightfully so. And I wouldn't blame it so much on everybody. They want to blame everything on racism, which I'm not going to go that strong on it, but it did exist. It still exists. But I think the main thing was that they just didn't tell anybody. They could have put it on a Caucasian fella, but they had to tell people what they were going to do. So the question you read was they would be thinking that Bobo Brazil would not go over down south because he was a black guy. Well, you know, you got a lot of black people down south too, and he may have went over better than what they think. Now, I work for an opposition group in Atlanta, in Georgia. It was called Dunkold Enterprises. And at one time, half the crew was black guys. They were mostly all baby faces, but half the crew out of a crew of, I don't know, say 16 guys, about five or six or seven of them were black. They were all like baby faces. So they wouldn't, you know, and we did good business. Good business, because a lot of towns down south, a lot of them are predominantly black. And since they didn't have anybody of their, of that looked like them on the card, they didn't come. But if they had somebody that looked like them in a, an important position, a championship position, yes, they came. So, but I think that's a two-pronged answer. I think they needed to know who the champion was and who he was against. I don't think you gave the other promoters time to adjust their booking accordingly, and that's why the big uproar. And, of course, his race could have had something to do with it. I wasn't there. I don't know. But the country's changed a lot in 60 or 70 years. What year was this?
61. So, I mean, this is still at the time of Jim Crow laws and lynchings, you know.
Absolutely. So they didn't call me about it. I was on 61. Oh, yeah.
I was about 12. Yeah.
That's about. They didn't call me up because I didn't have a telephone, so they could have sent me a telegram.
Could have sent you a pigeon.
Yeah, that did. I did play into it, so that needs a. And I didn't give it justice by giving that answer. But yeah, that was in the right in the middle of the Jim Crow era, the integration era. But you know where I was, if you're talking about that, I didn't really notice that because I must have been off in some really secluded section of the world, because I read about it. I never saw it.
They didn't have Jim Crow in oil trough.
Well, I was in South Carolina. But, and they probably did have. I didn't even know who Jim Crow is. I still don't know who he is. Who is he?
I don't know.
He's a cartoon character, right?
No, it's a town in Pennsylvania, I think.
Jim Crow is not a town in Pennsylvania. Jim Crow.
I've got to move on. No name given. Were you in Memphis at the time when Adam West turned up as Batman to cut a promo with Jerry Lawler? I don't want to make untoward suggestions, but Mr. West seemed like he'd been at the bar beforehand. Also, how did West end up so drunk for a morning wrestling show? So, why don't we watch it together?
Okay, for background, I was there. I did meet Adam West that day under the mask, but I did meet him.
Here we go, 1 second. You're already laughing. It's been off 10 seconds. You're already amused. Here we go. Well, he's got the cowl on and his gloves, and I think the tracksuit he drove to the TV studio in. Here we go.
Hey, you're going to be in town all this weekend. Is that correct?
Yes, I am, and thank you very much. I must apologize. I didn't have a ticket. Kids, don't do as I just did. I sneaked in because I'm on a case. And I'm working undercover, that's why I'm not wearing my complete outfit.
Right.
I wanted to be inconspicuous. I didn't want anyone to recognize me. But there is a rumor that Mr. Freeze and Penguin are here in Memphis because of the radical change in the weather, and that they have a hookup with the evil king of Memphis, who just might be wrestling here this morning.
Did he make that outfit himself?
Do you know who this is? Is that who I think it is?
Yes, it is.
What is this?
Well, what does it look like? Tell me, what does it look like? I heard he was going to be here today, so I dressed appropriately. That's what it is, the Super King. What else?
Okay, you say maybe you're going to be able to give us some help with this
like
guy.
A size
you're on the case, and I think we're going to need all the help we can get with the King.
Well, now I've heard he's had his troubles with the Joker and the Penguin and Mr. Freeze, but he hadn't handled a King yet. And I got somebody in a box that I'm going to bring out here in just a few minutes that'll make a Joker look like Mickey Mouse, I can tell you that.
I've heard about your box. But I want to say that that costume that you're wearing, if you are indeed the evil king of Memphis, has been stolen from a friend of mine, Soup. Superman, I call him Soup.
Right.
And I think that Spider-Man, Spidey Baby, would probably object to. By the way, looking at you, I don't think it's too late for you. I think it possibly, if you changed some of your habits, some of your methods of wrestling, if you used your left and right turn indicator in your car, did other things that people normally do when they're polite and courteous, and you weren't such a naughty, mean person, it wouldn't be too late for you.
And I can see that you're not familiar with these rednecks that we have around here.
Rednecks.
That's exactly right. That's right.
I tell you what, gentlemen, I think they're splendid people to me, and they're bat fans. I know they are. And I think it's insulting to call them rednecks. I think maybe we better settle this elsewhere. And again, both of you are going to be
at the... Dr. Frank in here anyway.
Both of you are going to be down at the Cook Convention Center at the car show all this weekend. And maybe you can settle it there. Batman, appreciate you coming by. And
thank you very much.
Hope
he's
you can
not
give us
a
with
nice
a, with
man
a king here. No, he is not. He has some nasty habits, as you say, and maybe he'll change some yes, of them. Yes, I feel that it's possible that we could help rehabilitate him, possibly in Gotham State Prison.
There we go. That was actually a lot better than I've never seen that all the way through.
Yeah, he was a little hammered. The reason he was hammered was because he probably stayed up all night. He got to Memphis. The bars are open back then all night long. They didn't have any blue laws there. And they would open to 6 o'clock in the morning. Then they'd run everybody off that hadn't already left. And they would open back up about 12. And then they start another day. So he probably spent the whole night in a bar and came out. And I guarantee you that interview they just did, they just went over it probably 5 minutes before they went out there. So, and it was an interesting interview. So I remember one time, I think he had him there twice. The second time, I may get this wrong, they had the car there. Maybe they didn't have the car there. But I do remember he wasn't at the matches. That was for an appearance that afternoon at some big deal that Lawler had set up. And no telling what, back in those days, no telling what they paid Batman to appear at that thing. But it was a lot of money for the time, and they probably did a hell of a job promoting him, especially on Memphis Wrestling. So, and Lawler wearing that Superman outfit is, I'll say one thing, you can watch that interview and not be bored by watching it. Because it went about 3 minutes, and you're wondering what they're going to do. They didn't do anything. But the thought was, well, they're going to do something here because it's on a wrestling show. So, but it had a hell of an audience. At one time, Memphis Wrestling had a 70 or 70% share of the audience. And that means all, or maybe an 80%. And they recognize that, or they say, well, of all the TVs on at 11 o'clock in the morning, 80% of them were tuned to Channel 5 watching wrestling.
Seeing if Adam West was going to tip over or not.
Hey, Adam West was bigger than what I thought he was.
Yeah.
He was probably about 6 foot.
I'm sorry, it's a Simpsons reference, but pure West. I have to just throw that out for the Simpsons fans, Alec. What did he say to you when you met him?
I just, hello. I just met him. He just, they brought him in the dressing room about, I don't know, probably 5 minutes before he went out. See, we dressed on the new set, and the other it had a studio. That was, I guess they kept that set up for wrestling. But we dressed where the commentators would read from the desk. We would dress over on that side, had two big, it was one big studio. They could just section it off. And we weren't that far from the people, because they were just a curtain between us and the fans sitting out there. So, and I think Lawler and Batman had just come from another dressing room right around the corner. That's probably where they went over their little interview. But there wasn't a lot of preparation put in that, as you can tell. But it did what it was supposed to do. So Batman was on TV and they advertised their appearance that afternoon.
I still love that. If he changed some of his evil and nasty ways, use his left and right turn indicators. That's a great line.
That's a great line. But I guarantee you he didn't make that up on the spot. He'd probably use that in some Batman editions of the show, and he just remembered that.
All it was missing Sorry.
Yeah, he was all over the place. He was all over the place anyway. And I think Lawler was kind of at a – he didn't know exactly where it's going to go, so let's just get out of it. And that's why he walked off.
Yeah, no, the only thing it was missing was the Batusi. That kind of
thing.
Anyway, we'll move on. Seamus from Western New York. Dear Dutch and James, here. Sorry, slightly wheeling. I have been watching through Mid-South Wrestling on Peacock. I noticed several wrestlers like the Samoans and Kevin Von Erich and Kamala all worked barefoot. Then, when watching The Iron Claw at the theatre, I noticed that they included that detail in Efron's portrayal of Kevin. Was there a noticeable difference in the way guys worked without footwear, and did you need to work any differently with them, i.e. watching not to step on toes? Thank you very much, both, for your efforts.
So did we have to watch their feet?
Essentially, yeah. Or did they, or could they not do certain things because they didn't have shoes on?
Well, I don't think there was anything they couldn't do because they didn't have shoes on. Because it's like anything else, you got to get used to it. Could I go out there barefooted and do it? I don't think I could. But I think Kevin was the one who went barefooted, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it Kevin?
Yeah.
Kevin. So, no, there's nothing they couldn't do. There was, the only thing you'd have to worry about them was, were they drunk? They were drunk most of the time I was around them. And he put that claw on me one time, Kevin did. I forgot what town we were in, outside Memphis somewhere. I swear to God, I thought I owed him money. Because when he went, you know, to put a claw on somebody, you just put it on them. But he didn't put it on me. He hit me with this part of his hand like that, then clamped it on. He almost knocked me out before he put it on. And I'm holding his hand here, and he'd lead me around, and drunken Cooter Brown. And I went, oh, my God. And the night he showed up right before about 7. We go live at 8. He showed up about 7:30. And the reason I knew he was drunk, because he was drunk at 7:30 in the dressing room. Then he disappeared. So we're going over the match and going over the match, and now it's 9:30, 9:45. No Kevin. And Kevin, I said, well, hell, just ride him out of the match. Okay, so since he wasn't there, he wasn't included in the match. Then I hear a big, you know, commotion outside in the arena. And Kevin had come through the front door. He went out the back door, but then he came through the front door. So now the people know he's there. So now we got to put him in the match. So we had to go back and redo the match. It didn't take long. And he went out there and he just threw his trunks on and went out there. And he was lost. I don't know how we got through that match. But we did. I think the people were just so infatuated by seeing Kevin Von Erich there, they didn't think about it. But I remember the match was kind of like a cluster F. I'll say it that way. But we got through it, and we couldn't say he wasn't there, or we don't know where he is. because they had seen him come through the front door. So, and that's when he almost knocked me out. So, yeah, I never asked him, did it, was it hard to work in bare feet? He never kicked me with any feet. I don't know. So I can't answer for him, but I wouldn't think it would be.
Were there any barefoot wrestlers from when you were a kid that you remember?
Argentine Apollo.
Rocco.
Was a
Rocco, sorry.
Argentine Rocco, I guess. No, they had another one too. Wasn't it Argentine Apollo? He's the one I met.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can look at it. Hang on. Ooh.
I think he wrestled in Georgia. He was there. And
how do you spell it? P O L L O.
A P O L L O, I guess. Argentine Apollo.
You see, that's an Argentinian chicken recipe that I've found there, so I can't find that wrestler.
Well, Pollo. Pollo.
It's chicken.
P O L L O is chicken. Pollo.
It looks like a nice recipe. I think Jimmy Snuka was probably the most famous barefoot one that I'd remember as a kid. And an interview he gave, he was like, yeah, broken toes
who else? Oh, Oki Shekina wrestled barefooted.
Yokozuna?
Oki Shekina, who probably didn't go anything but Georgia. He was a Mexican wrestling as a Japanese. Mm. They had me all confused. See, tell you how stupid I was. I thought he was actually from Japan. Because when I first broke the business, they wouldn't talk to me. I was a new guy, so I'd sit down, I'd look around. They'd say hello. Like Abdullah? Hell, I thought he was from the Sudan. And I'd look at him, he'd look at me, I'd go, oh, God. So one day he went, and when you talk to Abdullah, totally out of character.
Hey, champ.
He goes, hey, champ. Hey, champ. He had a voice like a little girl. And I went, what the hell? But he was over, big time over. So I can't think of any more barefoot wrestlers.
Matt Riddle's the latest one. I was going to say Yoko, loads of Samoans. Yep. We're going to move on. Peggy Sue. Hi, Dutch. Do you have any stories on Slick Johnson, the biker shorts referee in TNA?
He was a wild bastard.
Really?
He'd wear those glasses, and Dixie hated it because he was a friend of Jeff's. And he says, I don't know how the idea came up for him to wear shorts, but he'd wear shorts out there, and, you know, and it made him look different. I didn't really hate it, but he was different. And I think Dixie finally kept on and on and on. And I think they had to take him off refereeing or something, but he was a friend of Jeff. Good guy. That's what I remember about him. Skip Johnson. He was too much.
Hang on. Why did you say he was a wild man? There's got to be a story there.
No, he was a drunk.
Oh, okay.
He was drunk all the time, too. And back in those days, Jeff could put it down, too. So he was Jeff's drinking buddy and anybody else's buddy that wanted to get in there with him. But nobody could hang with Jeff and this guy. I mean, I couldn't hang with him. See, they could do 10 beers. I could do 3. And I'd be gone. Or 4 maybe. I was a little wussy. And Jeff could throw it down big time.
You know, the whole idea of referees should not be seen really until the 3 count for the most part.
Well, he wasn't. He just looked different.
You couldn't not look at him though. He had the sleeveless referee thing, like from the Shawn Michaels collection of referees.
We were going to do an angle with them somehow, some way, and he was going to turn heel. Because he looked kind of heel anyway, because he was against the grain. He didn't look like a regular, bona fide, genuine referee. He was different because the shorts made him different. And he did have the cutoff sleeve. right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think he did too now, thinking about him. And we were going to do something with him, but I think Dixie raised so much hell. Jeff just said, I'll just take him out. I don't want to hear it. I don't blame him.
He was originally WCW. I think he was Scott Steiner's referee. Anyway, we'll move on. Mike Rolfs, my friends, and I were at a house show in Springfield, Illinois. We were at the exit doors watching the wrestlers leave. Barry Horowitz came out with Earl Hebner. This little kid wanted his autograph, and now he was a babyface at this point. He shrugged the kid off. The crowd started booing him and yelled, "Barry, you suck." Oh, man, he was pissed. "You come down here and say that, big boy?" I was just stunned. I was 6'4 at the time, and I'm sure he still would have kicked my ass. My question is, what was the scariest moment you had with a fan while leaving a show?
Oh, a few fights. Well, not full fights. Guy would, I slapped the guy a couple of times because they come up just to, for people to see them, the fans to see them. And I would come out and they would get too close or try to grab your bag or try to hit you or something. And the only, it got really, really bad in Puerto Rico when we came out. But they were afraid to get too close to you because Puerto Rico, they thought the wrestlers were pretty tough. And because they were throwing rocks and everything else. So you had to watch going out to even getting close to them because they have a bad habit of carrying knives and guns. So you'd have to be wary of that. So I tried to keep my distance. See, when I first went to Puerto Rico, I saw how they were and I heard how they were, the fans. And I found a piece of metal that, you know, that's what they do. They pour concrete around it. And I found a piece of metal that had a curve in it, like a walking stick. I carried that piece of metal with me for 10 months while I was in Puerto Rico, carried it with me everywhere. So when I would go out, I'd have my bag in one hand and it was about this long, I guess it was, I could just get it in my bag to take it. And I'd pull that out and take it in my other hand. So everybody saw that I had something in my hand, so they didn't get too close. But those people meant business down there. Because when they hated you, they hated you.
Next question. Thomas asks, have you ever seen a referee really get injured in the ring? I know the kayfabe stuff where the ref gets knocked out, in quotation marks. I am talking about a real injury.
Well, it's probably happened. I don't think I've ever really seen it. But no, I've never seen them really get hurt. So maybe their feelings got hurt. I don't know. But I didn't check them on that.
I'm just having a look here. Here's a possibly a controversial question. No names given. Eric, greetings, James and the Dirty Dutchman. I'm sure with all these long road trips being away from home and always in different towns took its toll on different wrestlers. My question is how many married wrestlers would dip their pen in another inkwell while on the road? And how many wives back home were doing the same? Also an idea for a t-shirt. There's an idea for a t-shirt afterwards. I'll tell you off air. But yes, so of a percentage of the wrestlers on the road, how many were having a, how many of them had a out of wedlock tickle with the ladies on the road?
Brother, there's too many to name. I'm not going to name them anyway. But yeah, there was a lot of inkwell dipping going on, probably on both ends. But here's a misogynistic view on it. It was okay for the guy to do it. But if the woman did it, oh my God, what a slut. What a damn whore. What a because that made for some good locker room talk, but yeah, it was a. Let me say it was prominent, especially after the matches when the guy stayed over. Memphis, it was too much. You could stay at the hotel and to 4 o'clock in the morning, there would be traffic driving around and round and round the hotel. It's just carloads of women driving around. Not that I have had anything to do with it. I just noticed it. They just go round and round and too much. So they knew where you stayed, where you were going. They bring you food. They do this. They do that. So no guys out there, just girls going around and round.
Okay. I'll save that for later. What percentage of guys in a given territory do you think were married, were playing away? And can you name any honest, faithful wrestlers on the road as well?
Oh, yeah. We just come up with one, Barry Horowitz. Now, I don't know if Barry was so devoted to his wife or he just the women hated the little bastard. Because he was easy to hate. Yeah, there were a lot of guys that didn't mess around. A lot of them.
Percentage of those who did versus who didn't.
Well, you had the ones that I knew messed around. Let's say 25%. And there's probably the ones that didn't mess around. I'd say that's 25% too. But they stayed quiet. And then you got the ones that worked by stealth. You didn't know what they were up to. But they could have entered both clubs. Because all of a sudden there's a guy who said, oh, no, he won't mess around. Well, hell, you might hear later that, hell, he was the worst one. He just kept it quiet. On the down low, as they said. So, going back to an earlier question, what's the hardest I had with the fan coming out of the ring? Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Coming out of the ring one night. Place was sold out. And they had this barrier around the basketball. It was a basketball court. They called them conchas. They had this barrier there, like a fence. With, you know, gates leading in and out or openings. And they were all up against those gates and I couldn't go. And finally, I tried to go and couldn't get through. And finally, I just had to bust through them. And I had a security guard who he really wasn't a security guard. We tried to bust our way through and we got halfway to the dressing room and somebody hit me with a fist. Hit me right here, bam, and I'm ducking. It's like, I bet at least 100 around me. And it was just packed. All the people come out of the stands. And then I went down and some guy kicked me. Bam. Right in the face. And now I'm bleeding because he kicked me. I don't know if you can still see that scar there or not. But he got me right there. Blood all over the place. So I got up and I'm putting my hand here to block the shots. And there was three guys wearing my ass out on the way back. I had to go around a corner, the seats, and there was the door. And when I got close, you know, I was really close to the door, but I couldn't reach it. So guess who opened that door?
Go on.
Glenn Jacobs. Mm-hmm. And he stood in that door and he looked at him and they looked at him and we just all stopped for a second and looked at Glenn and they looked how big he was. And he just reached out like this and grabbed me by my strap and pulled me in that dressing room and then looked at him and they took off. So, and I've told Glenn, I said, hey, you kicked me from a hell of a, you saved me from a worse ass kicking than what I was taking. And he pulled me in there. And I remember going to the hospital that night. I had to go to two hospitals. I went to one hospital, 14 stitches here, and had to go another one, and I had to, I don't know why I had to go to another one, but I had to have stitches here. I had 8 stitches there. I had 20 stitches that night from some guy's boot upside my head. So, but that's how rough it got.
So they, just before we move off the previous question, I didn't ask you, which were, aside from Memphis, which were the best and worst territories for the ladies?
Well, probably. Now, this is just because I just hear things.
Of course.
Yes. But I guess Memphis was. Puerto Rico definitely wasn't, because women hate this too. Probably Memphis and probably Florida.
We'll finish on this one. Jim, Riverside, CA. Hello. One of my favorite wrestlers growing up was Polish Hammer Ivan Putski. I never really hear any mention of him and was wondering if you had any stories or memories about him. Thanks for... He just ends up with thanks, but I sort of had a slightly rising inflection.
Never really met him. Maybe one time. Never heard any stories about him. That he was just a gym rat. He spent most of the time in the gym. And never heard any bad stories about him. Never heard that he caused trouble. Never heard that he was a drinker. It was just a straight up guy. I never heard he talked that much, really. I never really knew anybody who was even close to him, to tell you the truth, because we worked different territories. He worked up north mostly. I worked down south.
We can't finish on that. I think he worked Texas quite a lot as well at one point, but anyway. We can't finish on that, so I'll do this very quickly, and you might not have an answer for this either. Jordan, hi, Dutch and James, relatively new listener here, love the podcast, wondering if you had any good stories about Mark Yeaton and what sort of production work he did for WWF/WWE, besides being the timekeeper and throwing Stone Colds his beers, of course. All the best.
Well, no, he was always a part of the production crew. I don't know if he went with the ring, but he always sat at ringside. He took the jackets, I guess, and straightened those out and got them to the back. Like he said, he threw the beer to Stone Cold, and I guess he was like a
gopher.
Well, he wasn't a gopher. He was out there to help the announcing crew, and he would help make sure that the camera crews had their cords not all messed up around that ring.
So like a floor manager kind of thing.
Well, not even that. He was a helper is what he was. The floor manager, I think it was done by the truck. I think Mr. Dunn would do that. So, but not any really notorious stories about him, because, again, just because you're in the wrestling business, we're in two different departments. Two different realms, really. He saw it from out there, and I saw it back in the dressing room.
Someone, I wonder if Mark Yeaton would see this, because I'd like to know what he did. If Mark, if someone gets this to you, we would like to know exactly what you did for the WWF and WWE for all those years, because I bet he'd actually have a lot of good stories. But for now,
He would, because he, I don't know, he would come to the dressing room, and he would just be in there for a second, and he'd be gone. He'd probably return something, or he'd give something to return to the dressing room.
I hope he's got better stories than you have about him. It's otherwise well, a terrible podcast guest.
Well, hey, I can make a bunch of shit up.
We'll do that for next time, though. That's for story time, I think. But for now, thank you very much, everybody,
No more questions?
No, we're nearly an hour.
You got to be shitting me. Seems like 15 minutes.
No, the time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or listening to this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
What other podcast do you do? I don't think you mentioned it today.
Oh, God, I completely forgot. Yeah, Shane Douglas, Franchise University with Shane Douglas.
Shane, I want you to remember this. He didn't promote you.
We've had fits and starts for so many weeks because he's not been able to get to... Because he has to travel to do the podcast. And we've had so many fits and starts because I couldn't... I was away in December. and we were like, we didn't do a show for 3 weeks.
I was away in December too.
Yeah, but we pre-recorded a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah, that's right, that's right.
But also, we were supposed to record last weekend, and there's tons of snow up in the northeast, so we couldn't travel. So that got put back a week, and now hopefully,
where does he live?
Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, around there.
Oh God, they're covered up in snow.
Yeah, so we couldn't travel. So that was another week. So, I mean, hopefully he can travel
this
week.
Does it snow in the UK?
It used to. It doesn't very much anymore where I am anyway. It's mostly rain.
But how cold does it get there?
Well, for the last week, it's been a few degrees below freezing. Just all day. Mm. It's just been miserable. But not that much snow. Like a light dusting. Further north, more snow. But I'm hungry, Dutch, so I'm going to shut down this podcast. Thank you very much for watching. As I say once again, questions4dutch@gmail.com. If you want to submit a question and maybe even make it into the script for me to ask Dutch your question and even get an answer. But for now, thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you again on Friday, and Dutch, we the people.
We the people.